themselves.
Actually, if I were to buy a lotto ticket and win, I'd still play in the Detroit Symphony because I love it.
Once one of the great American orchestras, the Detroit Symphony's journey parallels that of its hometown, now the epitome of U.S. urban decline. Symphony for Detroit.
Two biggest losers are the musicians and the people of Detroit.
This week's Radio 3 Sunday feature, starting at 9:30.
You're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's just gone 10 o'clock. And if you're tuning in for tonight's late night prom with Nigel Kennedy playing Bach, I'm afraid the hall isn't quite ready. You can imagine getting 160 members of the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain, let alone the audience, out of the hall, and Nigel and his band and the new audience in, does take a certain amount of time. So we're expecting to go to the Royal Albert Hall at about 10, about 15 minutes' time. So until then, here's some piano music by Billy Mayall, played by Susan Tomes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that little sequence of piano music by Billy Mayle ended with a couple of flower pieces, Autumn Crocuses, and before it his best-known work, Marigold. And the sequence began with Body and Soul, Sweet William, and Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. The pianist was Susan Tomes. You're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's 20 past 10, and coming up at 11:30, Here and Now, in which the composer Anthony Payne talks with Ivan Hewitt about his life and work. But now, from the stage of the Royal Albert Hall, here's Susie Klein with our late night prom.
Good evening, everybody. A very warm welcome. Tonight, at the proms, two musical giants go head to head. Both sensational violinists and both of them mavericks. One was famed for his addiction to coffee, his preponderance for alcohol, arrested for brawling in the street with a bassoonist. The other is a fan of Aston Villa, spiky haircuts and uncompromising opinions. One performer, one composer. Ladies and gentlemen, playing the music of J.S. Bach, it's Nigel Kennedy.
Wow. Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. That's more like it. So listen, man, it's not late because of me. We were just letting a few more people get in, and like, it's wonderful to see all these cats here in this amazing auditorium. It's a bit of a lonely job, this one, playing Bach in a solitary manner. So I've got the ghosts of a few musicians around me just to, like, you know, make a little placebo effect. So anyway, I'm going to start with this preludium, which just for anyone who might not have heard it before, I know all of you cats is like the most knowledgeable in the world, but, you know, one or two might not have heard this. The most amazing thing about it is this line of notes with the complete harmonic implications within them.
Nigel Kennedy opening this prom with the prelude of the Partita number 3 in E major for solo violin, BWV 1006. Bach is the composer this man plays every morning before he speaks to anyone.
Thank you, by the way. So this next sonata in its entirety is, it's a killer concentration, let's put it that way, and just as much for you as it is for me, so good luck, people.
Thank you.
The man just disappears into the music when he's playing. There's not a trace of Nigel Kennedy left. It is all about Bach. A whole world of emotion and expression there. Bach's Partita No. 2 in D minor, performed by Nigel Kennedy. He says of Bach, I have a responsibility to play this music wherever possible and as often as possible.
Thank you very much indeed. Man, I need a beer. Been off the alcohol at least a week for this. But I think, you know, I've got a theory about Bach, which many other people have had before, which is that Bach can swing. You know, I mean, you know, this D minor sonata is a pretty serious thing, and we've just got through that together, and, you know, not really trying to swing in that one, but it's nice, you know, some people put some of a bit of a beat in there. And I'm going to get, these instruments are not just for show. There's going to be some noise coming out of these things, and like I'd like to introduce to you like some amazing musicians who are going to help do a little bit of something to Bach, right? So, this guitar, this beautiful Macaferri, I think should be played by a great friend of mine from Frankfurt, the beautiful country of Germany, one of my favorite countries, fantastic place, a shame about the football, but you know, English is even worse, yeah. Rolf Boussalb, please. Pretty good applause considering you've played nothing yet. You better be good, mate. Don't be nervous. And on contrabass, someone suitable for the size of the instrument and a fantastic musician from Palestine / Israel, a fantastic player, Yaron Stavi. And then, it's lovely to see you, mate. You are big enough for that instrument, man. You know, it's fantastic having someone in the dressing room who can actually eat the rider. Anyway, so, last but not least, one of the social experiments in my band. As a young kid, when he was going to kindergarten or the equivalent of such, in Poland, he started beating the other kids physically, and the authorities, which had some say in people's lives in those days, kind of said, listen to his mother. This is like they said to the mother, Mrs. Zhezhits, they said, please, could you buy your kid some drums so he can hit those and not the children? Right? And this has been an amazing success. So I would like to introduce to you Krzysztof, still out of prison, Zhezhit. He has been rationed to one drum, so I hope this does not lead to a fight in a phone box later. But like, Krzysztof, how are you feeling?
Great, thank you.
Thank God for that. So anyway, yeah, let's keep him happy. I mean, whatever it takes, like. But so, we're going to play a song called Das Pendel, which is German for the pendulum, because, like, it's based on Bach and the geese are better swing. This features Rolf Busalb at some point after the first phrase.
Thank you.
Nigel Kennedy stomping his Doc Martens on stage as he gets Bach to swing the Royal Albert Hall. Krzysztof Dziedzic, the percussionist Jaron Stavy on bass, and Rolf Busalb guitar.
Thank you very much indeed, ladies and gentlemen. Rolf Busalb, guitar. Any Polish people in the audience? Okay. Well, I want to say something to Rolf. Masz pięknie włosy. Means he's got lovely hair. He washed it for you guys, Leo. Jaron Stavy on contrabass. Nie ma włosy. And of course, Krzysztof, still out of prison, Dziedzic. So, man, I'd like to move into another dimension, if that's all right. So, like, same type of merits to the composer we're going to play next. Fantastic harmonic master, phenomenal melodist, and some rhythm in it as well. This guy's called Fats Waller, and we'd like to do one called How Can You Face Me Now, which basically goes like this. How can you face me after what I've been through? All on account of you. How can you face me now? And that's why I'm not going to do the melody like singing it, all right? Okay.
Thank you.
you're never going to get a Bach concert from Nigel Kennedy without a few surprises and detours along the way. Fats Waller, how can you face me now? A sea of swaying bodies in the arena here at the Royal Albert Hall. Unsurprisingly, it's absolutely rammed full here tonight. I popped my head out the door earlier. The queue's snaking all the way down the street and beyond. A small bit of goofing around on stage from the band and Kennedy, tossing his bow in the air, spinning it several times, and of course managing to catch it beautifully.
One more for the road. Sorry? Two more? Man, that's too much, man. We don't know no more than this. And I've got through the whole night without swearing, and that's like taking some. This is a more well-known song by the same composer. He went out and bought some flowers one time to try and make his girlfriend sweet. This one's called Honeysuckle Rose. Yeah. Thank you.
so important, I think, to remember that Nigel Kennedy was the prodigiously talented student of Yehudi Menuhin, whose influence then spins off into the world of Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli. He's very much from that line, as well as the truly venerable great violinists of yesteryear. So much fizz, passion, intelligence, and sheer love of music in the way he performs. That was Fats Waller's Honeysuckle Rose. Krzysztof Jedzic, the percussionist there, Jaron Stavey on bass, Rolf Gussel on guitar. They're stamping their feet, they don't want to let him go. And lo, he returns. Kennedy punching the air. His bandmates full of warm smiles. I have to say, without being too gushy, it's been rather a privilege to hear all of this, and it looks like we're in for a bit more.
Yeah, try the intro out, man. That'd be pretty cool. Thank you.
The Royal Albert Hall raises the roof in celebration of the exceptional talent of Mr. Nigel Kennedy and friends. A double bill in this late night prom, the music of J.S. Bach and Fats Waller. Well, if it's more of the proms that you're after, tune in tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. We're back here live on BBC Radio 3, Brahms Violin Concerto and D major, the soloist Christian Tetzlaff. And Mahler, Das Klagen the lead. Edward Gardner leading all of that. Live from 7 o'clock tomorrow. But for now, for an absolutely packed Royal Albert Hall, it's time to hand you back to Andrew Lyle in Broadcasting House.
Thank you very much indeed, Susie. What a great evening. And just to remind you that if you're wanting to see that late night prom, it's been recorded for broadcast on BBC 4 television on the 9th of September. Make a date for your diary. Well, next this evening, it's time for Here and Now. It's presented this week by Ivan Hewitt.
Well, if you think that sounds like something stirring into life, you'd be absolutely right. That was the first few bars of A Day in the Life of a Mayfly by Anthony Payne. It's a witty title because a mayfly's life is only one day long, though it does manage to pack an awful lot into its one day on Earth, from being born out of its pupa to mating to dying. That piece has become one of Anthony Payne's calling cards, which is ironic as it's not really typical of him, except in its beautifully crafted finish and in a certain harmonic colour which is instantly recognisable. Payne is more interested in the human world, especially in memory and the passing of time, and how these things are bound up in our experience of the world, especially landscape. That does make him sound rather English, and Payne does feel a strong affinity with English music of the late Romantic period. But he's also been interested in modernist music since his teens, and his own music could be seen as an attempt to reconcile these two things. Anthony Payne has just turned 75, and he joined me in the studio to look back over his career and guide us through the four pieces of his that we're going to hear in this programme. Tony, welcome. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You've just turned 75, big milestone, but you said to me the other day that really you feel as if you're about 30.
I think everybody, when they get sort of old, say that they feel about 30. Until they look in the mirror in the morning and realise what kind of a face is looking back at them. I do have a feeling that I'm very like I was when I was 30, but of course I'm not really.
You find ideas come as readily as ever?
More slowly, I think, than they used to. Certainly, I think it takes me... I've always been a slow composer, but I think I take even longer now to work pieces out, and I don't think the ideas come quite as readily, but I have been composing steadily nose-to-tail pieces for the last 4 years, so there's... So far, no sense of drying up, luckily.
Well, one piece of yours has become really as well known as A Day in the Life of a Mayfly. It's a setting of Edward Thomas's wonderful and heavily anthologised poem, Adlestrop, which, of course, you wrote for your wife, Jane Manning,
yes,
many years
right.
ago.
Yes.
I wonder whether you were at all nervous about taking on such a well-loved poem.
That's an ironic question. I have to say, I love verse and I think I'm fairly well read, but I did not know this poem. I had a book of poems by Edward Thomas and I leafed through it and found this fantastic poem, Adlestrop. I thought, my goodness, a railway poem. I love railways, and it immediately struck a chord. And then I went ahead in all innocence and did it. You hear the train slowing down, coming to a halt, and then the recitative is this wonderful verses. If you speak Adlestrop, it sounds like someone talking to you. It doesn't sound like a poem. And then you look at the wonderful tensions and poetic structure of it. It's a masterpiece, and I just adored it. And I set it, and it was done, I think, at Aldborough. And David Bedford, old friend of mine, came up afterwards and said, how did you dare set that? Such a well-known poem. I said, oh, God, is it really? I said, in all my innocence. If I'd known it was such a familiar poem, I think I would have thought twice. Like, you know, you don't set to be or not to be, do you? I might not have done it. As it is, I went ahead and did it in all innocence, and I was very pleased with it. Thank you.
Adelstrop by Anthony Payne, performed there by Jane Manning and the group that she formed together with Anthony Payne called Jane's Minstrels. Well, Anthony, I suppose we should go back to the beginning of the story, really, way back to your childhood. Was there much music in the home?
No. I often wonder why I turned out to be so intensely engaged with music. It wasn't an unmusical family. We would listen to things like Housewives' Choice and all the Broadway songs and popular music of the time, of the 40s, were known to the family. And I love that music to this day. And various popular classics, you know, when the Hebrides came up, as it often did, they would like it. My mother liked that sort of thing. But, you know, music was never spoken of. I didn't know the names of composers. So there was no music and no musical education. Until all of a sudden one day, I'm afraid I've told this story a number of times, I was absolutely wrested from my kind of semi-Philistine existence and turned into a great music lover in 45 seconds, literally. I was about 10 or 11, just after the war. I think it was 46 or 47. The radio was droning on, the old home service, where in between items you would have a little something about what was going on that evening, and often they would play about 30 seconds, no more, of a piece you might hear. And this voice suddenly stopped and this music started to play and I was absolutely transformed. I mean, it was a transcendental experience. Well, I didn't know it was in those days. It was a, I don't know what they call it, an epiphany. It really was. I thought I was floating above the earth listening to this thing. Absolutely astonished me. And as the weeks and months went by, I suddenly realised that music did that sort of thing. And of course, the major question, what was that fantastic music that did this to me? And eventually, it must have been 2 years later, I heard it again, and it was the beginning of Brahms' First Symphony. So, dear Johannes, he sort of, you know, 150 years later, through the medium of radio, changed my life.
And it set you off on this long path from which you've never wavered for
minutes. Not really deviated from, no.
No, you became a student at Durham University.
Yes.
And then you came back to London, I believe, and didn't start composing immediately.
I'd had a block. I started to compose when I was still at school. So I was composing then, about 17. Got to university, hadn't heard any modern music. But then, of course, at university, I was introduced to Schoenberg, Berg and Weber, and I just didn't know what had hit me. I was absolutely fascinated by the idea of it, but I couldn't understand it. It was years and years and years before I thought that I really understand and love this music. It was a long, long haul, driven really by curiosity, actually. when I came down from university, I did dry up. I didn't know where to go. I thought maybe I wasn't going to be a composer after all. It was a rather slightly sad period for me, actually, as a would-be composer. That's when I took to writing about music, just to earn a living, really, because I loved so much music. I had very wide tastes, and I knew a great deal more music than most of my contemporaries because I was an avid listener to the radio.
Let's move on to the String Quartet No. 1, which dates from 1978.
Yes.
You were already, what, in your early 40s by this time?
1978, yes, I was 42.
Now, by this time, I get the impression that the modernist influence that you got at university had really settled into you, and it comes out in a big way in this piece.
Yes, I started to hear the music of composers like Lutosławski and Roberto Gerard. They were the ones that really got me going, because I couldn't relate technically to the Viennese school. I didn't want to write 12-note music. I wanted to write wide-ranging, chromatic, quite dissonant music, but I didn't quite know how to do it, and I think I found the way through that kind of composer, Polish avant-garde and that sort of thing. So they were the things that got me going and led eventually to the first string quartet, which is sort of height of my modernist period. You know?
Yes. And, I mean, you might guess at Elliot Carter, certainly an strong influence from him in the way that the musical texture seems to be made up of personalities, isn't it? Strongly etched little gestures.
Yes. And also, the one thing which I think has always been a stable element in my music, my liking for certain types of harmony and chords. I can hear them submerged in the background, but knowing they're there, I can hear this quite strongly.
Because this, I suppose, could be described as a sort of mosaic, except that the panels are of different, very different sizes, aren't they? Because some of them are tiny, and there are panels which are long enough almost to be called movements.
Yes.
Even though the thing happens in one span.
You have three types of music, like opening movement music, slow movement music and finale music, and they would get three statements, big statements, which you said are rather like movements, and in between this mosaic of little allusions to those types of music, building up to the big statement and then dying away after it, all interlinked in a very complicated mosaic, which I had to sort of make flow musically.
Let's hear it now. Anthony Payne, String Quartet No. 1, performed here by the Tippett Quartet.
Thank you. Thank you.